Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 73 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Falling Numbers, Rising Optimism, about my conversation with Glenn Squires and Mary Palmer Sullivan, respectively CEO and Vice President of the Washington Grain Commission. Have you ever been in a conversation with a person that starts out businesslike? You know, just the facts. But the more the individual talks, the more excited he or she becomes until suddenly they're jabbing their fingers in the air for emphasis, getting a little red in the face and smiling broadly as a great victory is recalled. It was kind of like that when I talked with my colleagues Glenn and Mary about the 2-year effort that went into getting Congress to appropriate an annual $1 million of new money into the budget of the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture facility based on the Washington State University campus in Pullman. The money will not only be enough to hire a wheat-quality professional focusing on falling numbers, there will be a large chunk left over for funding research. I was talking to Glenn and Mary for a different reason and didn't record them at their worked-up best, but I was so taken with their war story that I thought my listeners deserved to hear about it too. Unfortunately, you put a microphone in front of most people, and they tend to grow serious, which is my explanation for why Glenn and Mary aren't nearly so gleeful in this interview. Nevertheless, I think you'll hear their pleasure over what is a weedy triumph and a testament to the power of partnerships. To bring you up to speed, I have to go back a few years, so bear with me as I quickly sketch in the details that bring us to the point where Glenn and Mary can jump in. The falling numbers test has actually been around since the 1960s, if you can believe it. Our customers, starting with Japan, began including it as a specification for their wheat purchases in the 1990s. Before that, everything was done by visual determination. Graders looked at the seed to see if sprout had begun. But by the time you could see the sprout visually, the chemical process in the seed was already well underway. The falling numbers test reveals that early enzyme activity. Up to a few years ago, most everyone associated low falling numbers with pre-harvest sprout or rain falling on mature grain before it can be harvested. Yes, there have been anecdotal reports in the early 2000s about individual lots of wheat having low falling numbers when it hadn't rained at harvest. But then, in 2011, a larger wheat growing area was impacted. Idaho was also having significant falling number problems. This was not pre-harvest sprout. This was late maturity alpha amylase, or what everyone now refers to as LMA. LMA expresses itself around late May and June when the grain in the head is starting to fill. It doesn't happen to all varieties, and it doesn't happen all the time. Only when susceptible varieties are exposed to very cool temperatures in the morning and very warm temperatures in the afternoon. Moisture is not involved. After the fairly isolated 2011 event, we didn't hear much about LMA until 2013, when another portion of the wheat-growing state had low falling numbers without rain. At this point, the Washington Grain Commission stepped in with funding to research the phenomenon, a line item in the budget that has been ratcheting up ever since. Again in 2014 and 2015, falling numbers problems went silent. Then in 2016, all hell broke loose. There was a falling number catastrophe across the entire state, made up of both LMA and pre-harvest sprout. The calamity was made all the more tragic because the 2016 crop, with a 75 bushel an acre average across eastern Washington, was the record for the highest yield per acre. Which brings us up to September 2016, when the WGC met after what turned out to be a disastrous harvest that saw farmers lose tens of millions of dollars as a result of falling number discounts. It was at that meeting the board understood they were facing a problem that couldn't be solved by the WGC alone and set into motion an audacious plan. I interviewed Glenn and Mary at the WGC office on April 24, 2018. I started by asking Glenn to describe the mood around the board table after that bad news 2016 harvest.
I think the mood was that we have a tremendous problem and we got to address it. We had started addressing it early on. We made a request to Camille Stieber to really get more data about the varieties, getting ready for seeding so that growers had more information, because it just became a widespread issue across eastern Washington. So the mood of the board was, we got a problem and we got to solve it. We're doing stuff now, but it's bigger than our resources to be able to address it.
So what had we been doing prior to that point?
As soon as we knew that we had a problem back in 2011, we addressed it by purchasing a falling numbers machine and then having a researcher validate the machine itself and its whether or not it was really working. And if it was, in fact, the machine, or if it was the sample, or that whole procedure. So we started with that, and we also started working with the researchers at WSU, which included the breeders and then the USDA ARS folks, Camille Stieber. And they started utilizing the varieties that were obtained from the variety testing program and testing those to see if there was variability for the falling numbers. And so they were essentially creating a database, if you will, so that we could look year to year and see if there was any trends that was happening as a result of falling numbers, whether it was LMA or pre-harvest sprout. So, I mean, essentially, we had a pretty good feel for where we were going. But in 2016, everything changed. There were things that were trending that no longer were trending. And so everyone was really confused as to what was happening. And so that in itself was ultimately kind of the turning point in the fact that we knew that something different had to be done. I was getting calls at night after work from growers saying that they were cutting wheat that was the best wheat that they've ever grown. It was U.S. number one and great, in their opinion, great quality. And then it had falling numbers in the 200s. And so it was pretty devastating.
And then what happened? I did you immediately think of federal money?
Because there was a problem with uncertainty about whether the test was accurate, not accurate. You know, a retest on the falling number test would give a different number, and so there was frustration there. And so Washington State Department of Agriculture, Derek Sanderson, really took this on as an issue, because it was dealing with grain inspection, and WSDA does grain inspection. And yeah, we were spending money on projects, but we needed an infusion of funds to be able to address at the molecular level, so to speak, what's going on with falling numbers. And so that's what led into this idea of, well, let's get some increased funds.
Now, there was a white paper that was written at some point. What was this white paper?
Realizing this was a across-the-region problem, Washington joined with Oregon and Idaho and the commissions. There was a tri-state commission meeting held in November, and the commissioners agreed. We drafted a letter together, a white paper that said, here's the issue, and this is what we want to do.
That is when you decided to go to Congress for the money.
Yes, and I think that essentially we decided at that time that we needed about $600,000 for the position, and that would include the person's salary and their research. But ultimately, we had other opportunities to utilize funds. And I guess from my own basic background and historical look at when you go for funding, you essentially ask for more than what you need, because you might end up getting what you get. And so we thought, what the heck? Let's go for a million. Let's try it. Let's see if we can do it. And if we get it, that'd be great. And if they cut it, which is what usually happens, we'll actually get enough for creating the position.
As I was observing you from a distance in terms of the whole falling numbers conundrum, and certainly I was writing stories about it, I just didn't think it was possible to get money out of Congress. Was this a Hail Mary pass, Mary?
Actually, we didn't know we were going to get the money. In fact, it's pretty routine for folks to go back and ask for a specific project or money and end up having to ask for it for many years and not get it until and they may never get it, actually. So we thought we would start, and we were under a lot of uncertain terms in that we had a new administration. The Republicans had made it very clear that they were going to change things and there were going to be cuts. And so we didn't really know if we were going to get the money. What happened is, as we went forward, is we garnered a lot of support from the folks that we met with that were staff and members of Congress. And I guess for what it's worth, I mean, they were supportive in the concept of the research, but they said, we got to figure out how we were going to get this money. And so whether it was meaning that we could go back to ARS and ask them to reevaluate their programs and reallocate money within the current budget, or whether it was new money, at that point, we didn't know. But then when we were back in Washington, D.C. A year later, February of 2018, they were saying, you know, we pushed to put this into the bill, but we don't know if we're going to get the money. And then probably 2 weeks later, Congress decided to raise the budget cap. And that changed everything, because that allowed folks to be able to spend more money. And that essentially made it all kind of fall into place.
How important was it that all three states were working together on this?
It was crucial that all three states were together. And in this white paper we put together, there's really a two-pronged approach. One was $1 million directed to falling number work at the ARS unit in Pullman, which really is a regional center, right? And then the second component was increased funding for NIFA grants. And the NIFA grants are competitive. Researchers, you know, around the country can apply for those. I mean, let's go for both, right? You know, we felt like the targeted $1 million would be, you know, really a big win, because that would be $1 million coming to the ARS Research Center every year. NIFA grants, you know, come and go. They're good for 3 years, 5 years. And so we had both approaches. When we went to national meetings as a PNW, Dana Herron, actually from the Grain Commission, represented the PNW and made proposals to the U.S. Wheat Board and to the National Association of Wheat Growers Board, and explaining the situation and basically asking for national support from the national organizations. And we were able to get that. And so when we went up on the Hill, then we had the weight of the national organizations supporting the regional. So it was vital to be on board with everybody.
And I understand that Dana wouldn't take no for an answer.
During the NOG board meeting, he made the presentation, asked for support, and sat down. And the board just kind of decided to go on to the next topic, and he stood back up and he says, now hold it. I ask you guys for support. You know, I need to either make a decision.
Who were the other critical players in this whole thing?
Ultimately, I think it started with the chairman at the time, Mike Miller. He gave the assignment to Dana Herron from the Washington Grain Commission to kind of oversee this. From the grower commissioner position. Darren Padgett was the commissioner in Oregon. Potlatch Joe Anderson was the representative from Idaho. Those three guys got together, talked. There was meetings. And so at the commissioner level, there was a lot of discussion about how to do this. And obviously the administrators, you know, had a role to play as well. But really, those three individuals were key in kind of navigating and putting things together. Mary really kind of took the lead at the national level with ARS and working with them, just helping them be in the loop of, you know, what we were trying to accomplish. And then at the federal level, same thing in terms of, you know, making contact with the legislators and the language, and, you know, what do we need to do? We need more information. And so I think it was a real team effort of the PNW.
Mary, anybody else?
Well, I have to give recognition to the folks that are serving on our Appropriations Committee, because ultimately they're the ones that put it in the bill. And Senator Murray and her staff, Jason Smith, was a very integral part of this win. Dan Newhouse, Jamie Herrera Butler, and Derek Kilmer also represent Washington as representatives in the House, and they also are on appropriations. And so they essentially are the ones that made sure that it got in both bills. And oftentimes what happens is that you can get it on one side of the Congress. So say the Senate may put it in their bill, but the House doesn't. And when it goes to conference or discussion, if it's not on both sides, sometimes they won't bring it up. So that was in the very beginning, a huge win for us to have it ultimately on both the House and the Senate, because then we knew that they would be discussing it. And so we couldn't have done it without those appropriators helping us out. I think that we have to give recognition to Kathy McMorris-Rogers, too. She is not on appropriations, but she is in a high-level leadership position. And I think that her influence did weigh in, because she got a lot of calls from farmers, as Glenn said, that were pretty upset with what was happening with the falling numbers. And I think she wanted to help as much as she could. And I think in the end, she did influence a lot of the final bill. So I think ultimately Michelle Hennings and the officers at WOG took this to all of their appointments. We talked about it and did a lot of follow-up.
There are so many folks who go to Washington asking for money. I really don't understand how this rose to the level of congressional interest so quickly.
It rose quickly because our legislators were receiving phone calls from farmers. This was an unbelievably serious problem, huge financial hit to producers. And the legislators received these phone calls, and so they knew what was going on and the concern and the devastation that was happening because of this phenomena that we just didn't know about, and the effort to solve the problem. And I think really when the Grain Commission and the Washington Association of Wheat Growers, when we went back there and met with them, they, as Mary said, they understood the significance right away, and boy, they were just absolutely on board.
We were covering it from all different angles, not to mention the fact that we were also meeting with the key USDA ARS people whenever we were in Washington, D.C. And I think that relationship has continued to grow, and they have continued to trust us and appreciate the fact that we are partnering with them.
Are you saying that relationship that you had built with the ARS prior to this point had an impact?
Absolutely. And I think that has led to a number of projects that we've had success with. Our most recent was our partnership with WSU and ARS in building a greenhouse. And we essentially provided $5 million. WSU provided $5 million, and USDA provided $5 million in equipment over a five-year consecutive period. They knew that ultimately we had the resources, the people, and ultimately the commitment to partner and make this project happen.
Now, Mary, this looks an awful lot like an earmark to me, but there is no such thing as earmarks anymore. How did this happen?
The wording and the language was such so that it passed the muster, but it didn't specify for a specific state or a specific person, and so therefore it wasn't considered an earmark. But, you know, the reality is it was pretty much an earmark.
So what exactly is this $1 million that is going to come to us every year in perpetuity, hopefully? What is it going to be spent on?
First of all, we haven't gotten the money. It's still in the process of being processed. And what happens is that USDA ARS has to put together a job description, which they are working on, and they've submitted it to a regional office. And they have to approve it, and then it has to be approved at headquarters. And that allows them to then hire that person. So we estimate that cost will probably be about $600,000. And so essentially $1 million to Pullman isn't really $1 million because 10% of it goes to USDA ARS headquarters for administration. So that brings it down to 900,000. So if we take 600,000 and allocate the money for a position, that allows 300,000 for additional projects, which could be ultimately anything to do with falling numbers, essentially.
When might we expect some results from this new position that we have created, helped create?
I honestly don't know that that has been identified, but I think ultimately the person that takes this position is going to coordinate with the existing research that's been done by Camille Stieber and continue to develop a database that's going to identify the potential for pre-harvest sprout and LMA and identify what is susceptible. And then ultimately the goal is that once they've been able to look at what susceptibility is there, then they can also then start incorporating the genetics to prevent that type of occurrence from happening with that particular variety. I don't want to sound pessimistic, but ultimately it takes about 10 to 12 years to develop a new variety. So I don't know, as part of the big scheme of things, whether or not it would take less time or more time to incorporate those type of attributes into a variety. But I think ultimately, once we get that person in place and they've identified their priorities, we'll have a better idea of where we're going and how long it'll take.
Is climate change something that is going to be looked at as part of this position, do you think?
I don't know if climate change per se is going to be looked at, but I do know that they are looking at evaluating temperatures and they have identified different areas that they want to monitor that have been potentially susceptible to LMA or just falling numbers, low falling numbers in general. So I know that they are looking at putting weather stations out in locations that have been more susceptible. So if you want to compare that to climate change, then I guess yes, the answer is yes.
Any final thoughts?
I think it's just been a tremendous undertaking. It's consumed an unbelievable amount of time and effort, and I think it's proved to be successful. And ultimately, the producers need to benefit from all this effort, and I believe that that'll happen.
Mary?
I just want to acknowledge the fact that our relationship with USDA, ARS, and WSU continues to be a strong one. We've partnered with them. We've shown that we're in it to win it. I think that this win for the growers in falling numbers research has really strengthened our ability to work with USDA ARS, not only at the Pullman level, but at the national level. I've spoken with a number of the administrators since we've received the funding, and they're really excited about the fact that we were able to get it in this money. And yet they're kind of almost surprised that we were able to get it this quickly. In the big scheme of things, this is not something that happens. You tend to kind of chip away at it and go year in and year out trying to get more money or even get any money for that matter. And so it's a huge win. And I'm really proud of the fact that we all came together. It took a village to make this happen. I think that the growers are ultimately going to be happy in the end, because the research that we're going to conduct would have probably not ever, we could never afforded to do this and make the progress that we need to make in order to resolve this problem.
Producing a podcast requires me to listen to an interview multiple times as it is refined for release. Hearing some of my questions played back, I'm struck by how incredulous I sound. I seem to be complaining, whining even. But wait a second, there's no way you're going to succeed at getting new federal money to support a scientist researching a regional problem with a tiny constituency. And yet, it's said that luck comes to the prepared mind, and I think the subject of this podcast is a perfect case. The Pacific Northwest's success was a combination of the partnerships that were created among staff, commissioners, politicians, researchers, and agency administrators, as well as great timing. As Mary said, nobody was expecting the budget cap to be raised, but when it was, the WGC and the entire Northwest wheat industry was prepared to pounce. That's all the time we have. I hope you've enjoyed episode 73, or what I'm calling Falling Numbers, Rising Optimism, about my conversation with Washington Grain Commission CEO Glenn Squires and Vice President Mary Palmer Sullivan, about how, against the odds, the Pacific Northwest secured $1 million worth of annual federal funding to research solutions to the falling number phenomenon. Please join me again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It!
We are all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. Always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.